gone 24 hours, but that's 23 hours too long. All right, somebody better come out, Rick. She's been gone 24 hours, and that's 23 hours too long.
My house fell down, and again. So, if you're outside of our coverage area, remember, you can listen to WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
We're already seeing, and we're going to continue to see, massive increase in gas prices. And this is going to be dramatically accelerated because the United States will announce today, by the time you watch today's show, listen to today's podcast, it may already have been announced, the U.S. will ban oil from Russia, and the European Union plans to reduce by two-thirds the amount of oil purchased from Russia. We are already at record high gas prices, and this is only going to get worse. And I'm going to talk about all aspects of this. I'll talk about the political. I will talk about the technological, the climate change component, and the economic. But let's start with the big news today. The U.S. is expected today to announce a ban on Russian oil. The White House updated President Joe Biden's schedule to include an announcement of additional steps the U.S. will take to hold Russia accountable for its war on Ukraine. Those remarks will be delivered at the White House today. And the expectation is a ban on imports of Russian oil, which would cut about 8% of America's annual supply. Now, I want to remind everybody, we hear this talking point from the right. We were energy independent under Trump, and now we no longer are. The truth is that in the last couple of years of Trump, as well as last year under Joe Biden, the U.S. produced as much oil as it used. But that doesn't mean we only use our own oil. Some of the oil we produce, we export, and we also import. So even though total production and consumption were roughly equal the last couple of years of Trump and Biden, that is true. But also, oil is imported from Russia regularly. It's about 8% of American oil consumption, and that is going to stop. That has already caused oil prices to spike. In addition, the European Union is pledging to cut Russian gas imports by two-thirds. Did I say oil before? I meant to say gas. The EU is pledging to cut Russian gas imports by two-thirds before the end of the year. And that will also have an impact on energy prices, gas rather than oil. On top of this, Shell will no longer buy Russian oil nor Russian gas. Shell said it is breaking completely with Russia's giant energy industry, halting all purchases of Russian crude oil immediately and shutting service stations in the country. The UK-based company last week announced it was dumping investments in Russia, said it is abandoning all trade in Russian fossil fuels to align with government guidance. Russia is warning of $300 oil and threatening to cut off European gas if the West bans energy imports. And now Europe is saying, well, we're cutting down by two thirds anyway. So Russia looking to escalate and threaten. And believe me, I mean, I'm against the use of fossil fuels. I believe our transition to renewables has been pathetically slow and hindered by bad or lack of policy in large oil consuming Western nations, all of it. And I can't ignore that $300 oil and what it would do to gas prices and home heating, gasoline prices and home heating would be devastating to anyone who is in a financially precarious or even, you know, balanced, but not exactly a surplus economic situation. And we are going to talk about that. Now, we are already seeing record gas prices. The average is now right around $4.19 per gallon. And if you go back, you know, over the last 10 years, gas got close to four, about 394 back in 2012, about 369 in 2014. This is the highest that gas prices have been in 10 years. So where do we even start? First and foremost, we have to remember the political. How can American presidents impact gas prices? Gas prices are up globally, and there are lots of people who just want to blame Joe Biden. This is very stupid. Now, fact check me on this. I don't play politics with gas prices. When gas prices are low under a Democrat, I say presidents have very little to do with gas prices. When gas prices are low under a Republican, I say presidents have very little to do. When gas is high under a Republican or a Democratic president, I say presidents don't have very much to do with gas prices. Fact check me on it. This is a very dumb political football. What can presidents do to impact gas prices? Okay. One, an American president can say we're going to war against an oil producing country. Usually that raises gas prices. When we go to war with a country that produces oil, it's potentially going to disrupt the supply. So when an American president says, let's invade, like, for example, you know, the first Iraq war, prices tend to go up. Number two, a president can change gasoline taxes, raise or lower. And they can't unilaterally do it, but a president can advocate for that. And if gas taxes go up, then gas prices go up. And OK, so that's number two. And then number three, and this is the most commonly discussed one, there's this thing called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And a president can release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which will cause a small decrease in the price of oil and eventually gas, or it will slow down the increase if gas prices are increasing really quickly. So presidents can do very, very little. And this is global. It's happening everywhere. So if your priority is blaming Biden, I don't even want to hear from you because it's just not even substantive. The more pressing question is, number one, this again exposes how humiliatingly, woefully behind we have been on getting off of oil. Now, I know it's like, oh, you're going to do that. You're going to be that guy, David. I understand that transitioning off of oil takes time. Transitioning off of natural gas takes time. Putting solar panels on roofs and having electric heating and cooking and electric cars so that you get off fossil fuels other than for the production of all of the stuff that you're using. I get that that takes time. But we also need to remember that we didn't make much progress under Obama. We didn't make almost any progress under Trump. We continue to have completely inaccurate gas prices. In other words, our gas prices don't even come close to reflecting the true cost of gasoline on the environment and on the economy and on society. So it's been pathetic. And I also understand how if you're a family that like 40% of families in the United States can't meet an unexpected $400 expense without taking on debt, putting out a credit card or whatever. I understand that if gas prices go up to $5-6 a gallon, which $5.20 is one of the numbers that's being thrown around, average gallon could go to $5.20. And you need heating oil to heat your home because you don't have one of these new fancy electric heat pumps and solar panels and all that. You're still paying for oil. I get how you'll probably end up going into debt just to fuel your car and heat your home. So we can hold both at the same time, but let's at least be accurate in terms of who is to blame for this and the real role of presidents. And once the announcement is made and more accurate forecasts are made, we will follow that up. I am so glad to have the opportunity today to, I guess, bring you more evidence that my instinct yesterday when we looked at clips of Donald Trump's former attorney general, William Barr, saying Trump's election lies were BS and whatever. It doesn't make Barr a good guy. It doesn't even make him a sensible guy. And the day after these clips went viral of William Barr saying Trump brought in a clown show of lawyers after the election, all of this stuff, when pressed, William Barr still says, I'd vote for Trump over a Democrat if he ran in 2024. This is exactly what I was talking about yesterday. Bill Barr, after saying Trump lied about the election, he incited the attack on January 6th, et cetera, et cetera. He told Savannah Guthrie yesterday, well, if it's Trump versus a Democrat, of course I'm going to vote for Trump because Democrats are really, really bad. This is why I say these are not good people. These people are not our friends or any of it. Bill Barr wants to sell books. That's all that's going on. Take a listen.
God, you say in your book, it's time for the party to move on from Trump. Liz Cheney has said he is not fit to serve and should not be ever near the Oval Office again. Do you agree with that?
Well, I certainly have made it clear I don't think he should be our nominee, and I'm going to, you know, support somebody else for the nomination.
But if he is the nominee and you have your choices, Donald Trump or whoever's running on the Democratic side, would you vote for him?
Because I believe that the greatest threat to the country is the progressive agenda being pushed by the Democratic Party, it's inconceivable to me that I wouldn't vote for the Republican nominee.
So even if he lied about the election and threatened democracy, as you write in your book,
it's
better than a Democrat.
It's hard to project what the facts are going to turn out to be 3 years hence. But as of now, it's hard for me to conceive that I wouldn't vote for the Republican.
Even though he's a threat to democracy, a threat to our country, incited a riot, lied about who won the election, brought out a clown show of lawyers. I mean, listen, progressives are really the threat. This is why these people are so dangerous, guys. And this is why I told you he stumbled across some small factoid, some small element of truth. But this is not a good guy. And it's the same thing with Liz Cheney at the end of the day. Liz Cheney maybe wouldn't vote for Trump against a Democratic nominee, but she still did vote with Trump something like 88% of the time when Trump was president. Just as a reminder, here's what William Barr said about Trump yesterday. But remember, he'd still vote for Trump over a Democrat.
And I told him that all this stuff was bull and about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was. And he started asking me about different theories, and I had the answers. I was able to tell him this is wrong because of this.
You're trying to set him straight.
Yes. And you know, he listened. He was obviously getting very angry about this. I said, okay, well, look, I understand you're upset with me, and I'm perfectly happy to tender my resignation. And then, boom!
He slaps the desk.
He slapped the desk, and he said, accepted, accepted. And then, boom, he slapped it again. Accepted. Go home. Don't go back to your office. Go home.
So William Barr saying that, William Barr also referring to all those wacky lawyers that Trump hired to try to flip the election as a clown show.
And about election fraud. And, you know, it was wrong to be shoveling it out the way his team was.
And then he also told Trump what he thought of his legal team. Not a lot.
I said, the reason you are where you are is because you wheeled out a clown show of lawyers.
A clown show?
Yeah. Clown car or something like that. I said, it's just,
yeah. So anyway, he'd still vote for Trump if there's a Democrat. I mean, he says this guy's not fit to serve. He's a threat to the country, terrible for democracy, all this stuff. Well, but no, I mean, listen, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden, completely, you know, innocuous milquetoast Democrat who, you know, will be lucky to have major accomplishments that change American society or the economy in any serious way. It's actually almost worse that, you know, there's the people who think Trump's great. It's like, okay, well, I disagree with you. And I would have that argument with you. But these people realize Trump is nuts, a threat to democracy, unfit to serve. And they still say, well, if it's Joe Biden or Kamala, I mean, I just can't imagine I would ever vote for a Democrat. It's completely and totally bonkers. And this is exactly what I was talking about when I was saying, this guy wants to sell a book. That's all he wants to do. Send me your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show depends on your support to do what we do. You can sign up on our website, joinpakman.com, get a membership. You'll get the daily bonus show as well as commercial free audio and video streams of the show. And you'll get the show every day, not only without commercials, You'll get it 5 to 6 hours before everybody else. There's some really great perks to being a member, and you can sign up at joinpacman.com. Also want to mention, we have a new initiative. If you were already a content creator, we are going to be doing a sort of group coaching thing where I will work with 4 or 5 handpicked content creators to help grow your platform. The only requirement is you must already be regularly creating content on one of the major platforms, and you have to apply at davidpacman.com/coaching. I mentioned yesterday 4 or 5 times, davidpacman.com/coaching. A bunch of people emailed me saying, David, I'd like to apply. Do not email me. If you email, it's going. I hate to say it. By virtue of not being able to follow the instructions, it's already bad. Okay. DavidPacman.com/coaching. No need to email. If you're interested, DavidPacman.com/coaching. And the information is there. You can apply. It's going to be a cool new thing. Hoping to grow some other content creators. Let's look at some stunning clips. You may have heard, or you may not, that the U.S. trucker convoy advocating for freedom from something. Mandates, I guess, that mostly don't exist, or I don't know. The U.S. trucker convoy is demanding their freedom. They have been oppressed by tyranny and different things. They've started to get close to Washington, D.C., and some interviews have now been done with them. And it seems like a skit. Here are the good liars who do this really, really well. Interviewing one trucker yesterday, and she is most concerned that they want to digitile us. Like, you know how you would tile a shower and digitize? So it's digitile. She doesn't want to be digitiled. Wow. Take a look.
Are you really concerned about right now?
I don't want them to digitile us.
You don't want them what?
To digitile us. I don't want to take medicine that'll hurt people.
Mm. What was the word you used, though? I haven't heard that.
Digitile. Digitile.
Digitile? And what does that mean?
They're trying to make us robots. They're trying to make it where we have no choice and nothing, to where they control.
Maybe by digitile, she means like made into an android or something.
Well, they can control us from what they put in our bodies.
And eventually we'll actually be robots?
According to what they're saying, not robots, but according to what they've already got, a full man-made working female robot.
Maybe, I guess she's talking about like those sex robots that recently made news. I don't even know. But how wild is that, guys? Like, how much of this entire trucker convoy fiasco is just the result of bad education and confused people? I mean, this woman seems to not have any idea why she's there. She's there because they want to digitile us. I mean, is it that, you know, we talk about, well, you know, there's sort of like these misunderstandings about what liberty and freedom are, and people want freedoms absent responsibilities. And it's like, are we just doing too much? And it's just like they want to digitile us. It's just confusion and bad education. Is it just that simple? Here's another interview with some truckers, I guess is what we're calling them. And these folks want, they believe the Russian invasion might be fake. It's not really going on, I guess.
Easily fake a war if they wanted to. All they would do is just like film a few things. And
are you aware that the majority of the pictures that they've been showing regarding the alleged war in Ukraine are from prior conflicts and are unrelated to Ukraine?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
We shouldn't have anything to do with it at all. Let them figure out their own mess.
The very patriotic honking in the background, as you can hear.
State has always made Putin to look like the bad guy, but he's a good guy.
Freedom!
Okay. So the war is fake also. That's another, you know, pretty big brain take. And then here's one more clip of a guy wearing, I guess, some kind of head it's almost like a chain link armor. I'm sure these things have specific names, but I don't know them. Take a listen to this guy.
Is this a crusade? Yeah, I believe it's a people's crusade. Doesn't you know, it can be peaceful, but you know, it's a crusade in the fact that people have to fight the evil in the world, man. And the evil is you're heading down to the evil in the world, and people have to band together and fight on the side of the Lord. You know, God wills it, man.
Fox wanted to do a story on dissent in the ranks here.
So anyway, so that guy thinks that they're basically doing, I guess God wants there to be a convoy, and they are there doing their thing. Now, one other thing, just this might be of interest. This is actually sort of smart. Like, they're realizing that if they go into D.C., they might actually get arrested, blocking traffic, different things. So one of their, I guess, leaders is framing it as they're trying to sort of like goad us into going to D.C. to then arrest us or something. Take a listen.
I am fearful. Brian Brazzi and the organizers are fearful of them trying to do to us what they did to those involved in January 6th. It is our belief that they will try to do that. So with that said, we are making diplomatic moves. That means at this time, meaning today and tomorrow, we are not and will not go into D.C. proper.
So that was disappointing to some of the convoy people, but others realized, you know, they're trying to set us up like they set up the rioters, and we're not going into D.C. Basically, the entire thing has fallen flat, and the interviews with the vast majority of the folks are indistinguishable from what would be a Saturday Night Live skit when Saturday Night Live was at its funniest. I hope that people understand the multiple layers of this clip that I'm going to play for you. Some of you I know follow UFC Ultimate Fighting Championship, which is an MMA league, a mixed martial arts league or tournament. I don't know if they call themselves a league or, you know, event organizing organization. One of those fighters, a guy named Bryce Mitchell, delivered a completely delusional right wing rant the other day. And we're going to look at the rant because the rant itself is totally wacky. But the other thing that I want to mention is Donald Trump Jr. Retweeted it and said, "I'm with him." Now, I just want to remind you guys of the absurdity of all of these right wingers who say athletes should just be athletes, shut up and dribble, this type of thing, when they don't like LeBron James's activism, or they don't like Colin Kaepernick or an Olympic athlete or whatever, making a political point that they don't like. They say you got to keep this stuff. These are just athletes at the end of the day. They should just be doing their sport. But when you see a guy like Bryce Mitchell deliver a delusional right wing rant, Don Jr. all of a sudden loves it. Now, there are so many prototypical fallacies and red herrings here that it's like a masterclass in lack of critical thinking. So let's just start and then we'll analyze as we go.
Well, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the whole Russia and Ukraine situation.
You know, here's my first thought is I'm not going nowhere to fight none of these wars for these politicians. I'm staying at home. And when the war comes to Arkansas, I will dig my boots in the ground and I will die for everything I love.
Okay, now that's totally fine. I'm actually fine with that. But now remember, Joe Biden has said he's not sending troops to Ukraine anyway. Also, the idea that people are going to invade Arkansas. I mean, I'm not making fun of Arkansas, but Arkansas, if he's like, well, I'm from Arkansas, I'm just here to defend Arkansas. It's unlikely, just statistically, when you consider what are the economic centers, et cetera, that Arkansas is going to be the front line. But that doesn't matter. So far, fine. He's not going to get involved. He doesn't want to fight the war. Fine. I'm with you.
I will not retreat.
Okay.
If this country's invaded and everybody's saying, well, we gotta evacuate, we gotta leave, I will not. I will dig my boots into Arkansas soil and I will fight for the people that I love, for the land that I love and the way of life that I love. But I'm not going overseas to fight. I don't know what's going on, to be honest, brother.
Okay, so he admits he doesn't know what's going on. Good.
There's so much stuff, and I don't think nobody knows what's going on.
Oh, but okay, so now is where we start to get to this trope. I don't think anyone knows what's going on. It's so complicated, nobody can know what's going on. And this is a typical thing that you hear from, I mean, listen, we've seen these vaccines, I mean, syringes, mRNA, a polyethylene glycol, the virus, it's sequenced, but from a lab or not. I don't think anyone really understands it. Well, no. You might not understand it, but people do understand stuff. Look, there's this invisible air that we breathe, but it's got oxygen in it, nitrogen, CO2. I don't think anyone really understands which of these elements do we really need to survive. No, actually, we do know that. We actually do. You might not know it. So this is where it starts to get a little bit fallacious. And then, so remember, he said he doesn't know what's going on and nobody knows what's going on. Let's continue.
There's been so much political corruption in that area. You got Biden and his son making a shit ton of money.
Well, wait, hold on a second. Wait a second. If you don't know what's going on and you just aren't sure of what's happening, then why are you repeating right wing conspiracies about Joe Biden personally making money from the? So it sounds like now you're asserting you do know what's going on.
Off of and using our tax dollars to bribe their people. That's treasonous, in my opinion.
So he goes from, I don't know what's going on and I don't want to get involved, to Biden committed treason by using U.S. tax dollars to bribe someone. Wait a second. I thought you said you didn't know what was going on, Bryce.
So you got Hunter Biden and his son using our tax dollars. Hey, if you,
by the way, Hunter Biden's son, I'm guessing he means Joe Biden. He doesn't even know the talking points. Hunter, I didn't even, this is the first, does Hunter Biden even have a son? I guess he does. I mean, he's such a non-factor. I don't even know whether Hunter Biden has kids, but I've certainly never heard that they're involved in the conspiracy.
Ukrainian government, if you don't do this, we're taking your tax dollars. He shouldn't be giving our tax dollars to that country anyway.
Now, what's really funny is, if you want to, by the way, for a guy who doesn't know anything, surely expressing a lot of opinions. If what's funny about this is, if you don't think things should be held over the head of Ukraine, Trump wanted to withhold military aid until such time that Ukraine got him dirt on Biden. And thanks to Colonel Vindman and others, Trump ultimately had to release the military aid to Ukraine. This guy's criticism, which he claims I don't know anything, and now he's making about it, actually applies to Trump. Think about how backwards everything is here.
Veterans out here sleeping on the street, and you're going to give our freaking tax dollars to these Ukrainians and all the, brother, I don't know what's going on over there, but I'm not going over there fighting, and God bless anybody that's over there fighting, and I hope that this shit just gets solved. And man, I don't like war.
He's against
you
war.
Know what I mean? I don't want people dying and all that stuff. I don't want to be, but I don't know what's going on. There's so much stuff that I think that's corrupted that we just don't know what's.
For a guy who says, I don't know and we don't know, he sure has a whole hell of a lot of opinions. And of course, he was spreading all sorts of misinformation here. And then he was called out for it. And then here was his reaction to that.
You were recently on the MMA Hour. What was the reception to that interview like?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is him reacting to from what he said on the MMA Hour. Okay.
Ariel Helwani's.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't completely censor me, but he put that I was spreading misinformation, and I don't know. You know, I thought I said a lot of true stuff, but it's open to a debate, and you know, I love the Second Amendment, and I love the First, and you know why we have the First? Because we have the Second.
Yeah. And so that's a classic gun person claim. When someone writes an article saying you spread misinformation about what you said on a podcast, the First Amendment just isn't a factor. It just has nothing to do with government censorship of speech. And so, you know, my view is I don't have any particular. Some people say athletes should talk about politics, and others say they shouldn't. The equivalent of shut up and dribble. I think anyone should say what's on their mind in whatever venue they deem appropriate. And if people don't like it, they can respond to that and say, I'm not going to patronize this or that, or I'm not going to pay for tickets to see whatever. But whatever you say is subject to review and to criticism. And I've heard interesting things said by athletes before, what this guy is saying is just utter and complete nonsense. And he's welcome on the program anytime to discuss any of these topics. We'll have the clip on Instagram at David Pakman Show if you're just listening today. It is worth watching it rather than just listening. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Alexandra Hudson, who's an award-winning journalist, author, and speaker, as well as the founder of Civic Renaissance. Her new book is Against Politeness: Why Politeness Failed America and How Civility Can Save It. It's so great having you on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, David, for having me.
So, I mean, I think to start with, we should talk about the difference between politeness and civility. There's so much discussion, particularly in modern politics, about many people aren't civil, or can we continue to be civil versus politeness, which is really something different. So maybe let's start there. Like, what are these two different concepts?
It's a good question. That's the core thesis of my forthcoming book, that there is this difference. But I think a lot of people today fail to recognize there's a difference. We use these two terms, civility and politeness, interchangeably. And that makes it difficult to think, okay, what do we want less of in society and what do we want more of? Because people today, they either long for more civility, more politeness. They long for these days of gentility and chivalry and think society is going to hell in a handbasket, or they want less of politeness. They think that it's civility is a tool of white supremacy, a tool of social oppression, a tool of social injustice. So I argue that by making this distinction, we can again have more clarity about what we're talking about. We want what we want. So I argue that politeness is a technique. It's manners. It's the superficial expression of social norms and etiquette. Civility, by contrast, is a disposition. It's a way of looking at others and the world and seeing other people as human beings, just like us, with equal moral worth and with beings with dignity and worth and worthy of respect. And the etymology of these two terms supports that distinction. The root word politeness is the Latin word polire, which means to smooth or polish, and that's what politeness does. Again, it focuses on the external, whereas civility, that the Latin root is civitas or civis, which is city or citizen, and civility connotes the conduct befitting a member of the city or a citizen of the duties of citizenship. So I think it's important to make this distinction to know, what do we want more of and what do we want less of in society.
For many people, they might be thinking about these concepts in the context of conversations they have with, their uncle at Thanksgiving or whatever the case may be. Can you kind of apply this to such interpersonal conversations and give us examples of how civility and politeness can overlap, but also one can exist absent the other, and kind of what that would look like in human interaction?
Absolutely. I'm of the mind that civility is actually the truly respectful way of engaging with others, because it's seeing people as human beings first with equal moral worth. So whereas politeness would want to smooth over differences, civility says, I respect you enough, David, to tell you when I think you're terribly wrong on a subject. I'm not going to patronize you and just smile when I think that you're incorrect. I'm going to tell you what I think. That's that truly respectful thing to do. However, and again, that's what a democracy requires. It requires being able to have robust, honest discourse and not just suppressing discussion or papering over important differences. However, I will note that not all contexts in life are the same. Having a debate in a college classroom or on the floors of Congress is different than having a dinner with your family member. And I'm a firm believer that politics has taken too much of our consciousness and our psyche, and is too much a part of our lives. And there are way more important things in politics, such as relationships with family members. And I don't think that you have to fight to the death on every single political issue. It's too easy to let political issues come between relationships and family relationships these days. And so I think it's perfectly fine to say, you know what, we're not going to talk about XYZ issue. We're not going to talk about politics at all, because we're going to talk about other things, our kids or, our lives, because this relationship matters more than focusing on, the sore spots, the areas of disagreement that may not be reconcilable right now.
Yeah, sometimes viewers will call me and they'll say, hey, like, for example, a left-wing viewer will call and say, When I go back to wherever during college break, you know, my parents have turned into the opposite of what I am. They watch Fox News all day and they think Joe Biden lost and they think the vaccines turn you into a turtle and, you know, all these different things. How can I change their mind? And my answer always is, well, what are you willing to allow to happen to your relationship with them? Because I could answer in terms of how minds are sometimes changed. But part of it is, are you willing to not have a relationship with them anymore? Or you need to figure that out first, so to speak. And it seems that that is missing sometimes from just figuring out how can I have my ideas win over someone else's.
And I think that's reflective of this mentality in our political discourse today where it's all zero sum. It's like I have to win. And I'm going to win at all costs. It's like, you know, scorched earth policy. And you can't take that logic and apply it to our relationships and our family context. A, I don't think that's the right thing to do. And B, that's not the right thing to do generally. You can't have a democracy with that sort of scorched earth zero sum mindset. That's the conclusion of my book argues that, again, we suffer from a crisis of misplaced meaning in our society today, where these traditional touchstones, family, civil society, church, these are all kind of on the rescendant and in recent years. And politics has become the place where we derive our meaning from, which is why every political issue, it like cuts us to our core. Someone disagrees with us. It's like we're being personally assaulted and we go into fight or flight mode, as opposed to if we had these other derived our meaning from other places, we could have kind of the equanimity of spirit to be able to have these difficult conversations. But we've allowed politics to matter too much to us, which is why it's difficult to have these conversations.
Well, before we move on to the more like governmental level application of this, to keep it at the personal a little bit, there are no doubt people who will hear this conversation. And they'll say, well, you know, guys, Alexander, David, there are circumstances where it's not that I'm looking for a fight, but I cannot be civil nor polite with people who, for example, if I were gay and I know that I'm around people, whether it's parents or coworkers or whatever, who quite literally believe that I'm going to hell, I'm an evil person or whatever, something so fundamental to what I am and who I am. It's not that I'm trying to make political disagreements the forefront, but I can't be civil with someone who sees me in that way. It's very easy to say, let's not make it all about politics. We don't have. But when it's something so core to who I am, I can't be civil. I can't be polite. It's not possible. There's validity to that as well, isn't there?
Of course, and I absolutely empathize with that position. I would, however, point people of that mindset to a really powerful example of someone who lives out decency with people that he disagrees with, to say the least. That the jazz musician Daryl Davis, if you haven't heard of him, he's someone.
He's been on the show. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. His story is incredible. Where he makes makes it his personal mission in life to win over white supremacists who literally think he's a subhuman, and he does it through conversation and kindness and relationship. No one's ever been persuaded to change their mind about anything by being insulted and like hit over the head with rationality and arguments. And he really embodies the ethos of saying, you know, I'm going to see the personhood past the bigotry, and I'm going to try and reach that and focus on what we have in common. And he's changed a lot of hearts and minds that way. That's a really powerful example for each of us.
Yeah, what he does is really incredible. When it comes to national and world level politics, are there some examples of when politeness led to bad outcomes or results that we could talk through?
Well, politeness across history has been this tool of division. It's been a way of signifying the in-group and the out-group, between countries and within a given society. It's been a way for people to feel superior to others. In ancient Greece, for example, anyone who didn't speak Greek and have the manners of Greek people were called barbarians. That's where we get our word barbarian from. It means someone who basically doesn't speak Greek. And for the Greeks, they didn't leave it as, okay, they just speak a different language and they have different manners than us. for them, they said, okay, they're different from us. Therefore, they're morally inferior and they're lesser than us. And that logic, that kind of thinking is not unique to the ancient Greeks. We see that all across culture, all across history, and even through to today in the American Gilded Age, for example. There's a fabulous new HBO show called The Gilded Age that I'm loving right now every Monday night. And that's a great example of how manners and social norms and politeness was weaponized to keep the nouveau riche, the parvenus, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. They were the nouveau riche. They're the names that we remember now, but they were the outgroup. They were the ones that the old money in society wanted to keep out. And so Emily Vanderbilt's, you know, big tome and on etiquette, and Emily Post as well. Those are all etiquette books on, you know, handbooks for how to be a social elite that actually the middle class and immigrants who came to America started reading and saying, oh my gosh, this is what it means to be an American. And they kind of, it helped them assimilate. It was kind of a shorthand for how to do this thing called life together. So what originally started as this project of exclusion ended up being a way to invite and welcome the newcomer into society.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard from people who did not grow up necessarily with parents that were able to inform them of a lot of kind of social norms and etiquette stuff, talk about, I got into college and then the job fairs, and they realized at a certain point when they would get to either these group interviews or different things, it wasn't that they were less able or knowledgeable when it came to the subject matter, but they realized they didn't know all the social norms, even when things as simple as when everybody sits at a table to a meal and there's sort of like a pecking order in terms of like, we're the people doing the hiring, we're the people. They knew they were at a disadvantage specifically for those reasons.
Absolutely. I think too often we assume we know someone's character, you know, their inner state by the shorthand, by manners, whether they know which fork to use. Mm. And again, this is how the norms of politeness have been weaponized across human history. And part of my argument for my book is we need to focus less on those the trimmings, you know, focus less on the etiquette and more on the timeless principles of civility that have served us well in this project of human community across time and place. I argue that, you know, civility is not a new problem. It's not an America problem. It's not a now problem. It is a human problem, which is why every single society without fail across history has had etiquette books. That's a whole genre. And they've had social norms that help us do this thing called life together. It's hard. Society and civilization is fragile and it takes work. And if we're not all doing this together, we're not all part of this, you know, thing called society together, it's going to fall apart. And we've seen, like, we're watching, you know, civilization fall apart in the Ukraine right now. War is very much a part of our world today. And we can't take that for granted. We have to remember the role that we each have in supporting this thing called a free society, this thing called a democracy, and this thing called human community.
Hey, when it comes to someone like Donald Trump, you know, the making fun of a disabled reporter and the saying Rosie O'Donnell, I don't remember, is a dog or is fat or whatever, you know, all the coarse language and all that stuff. Did Trump change expectations of politeness or civility in politics?
I think that's an interesting question. There is no doubt that he did coarsen our public discourse in a lot of ways. But his two things, I think his the crassness of his language, the candor, I think a lot of people saw that as truth telling. That was the you know, people saw that as, okay, he's being honest and civil. People are sick of the politeness, the veneer, the political correctness. People are sick of being suppressed and you know, the language policing that was going on. He cut through the hypocrisy of all that. And I think that appealed to a lot of people, which is kind of why I make the argument that we need to care less about the form, care less about the politeness, and more about civility, the honest truth-telling that we need for democracy. So I think he tapped into a really important insight that people have been sensing and intuiting for a really long time. But secondly, it is really important that to realize that Donald Trump did not create our civility problem. Again, this is not a new problem, not an America problem. This is a human problem. It's been a challenge to human community. So I argue in my book that as human beings, we are profoundly social. We thrive, we become fully human in community, but we're also profoundly selfish and self-interested. We aim to meet our needs before others. We're just biologically, morally driven that way. And those two things are always in tension. They always have been and always will be. So there's never going to be a permanent solution to the civility challenge in our world today, and there never has been. But what we can do is look to the wisdom of the past, look to how thoughtful people have advised that we overcome this tension before and help us live well together.
The forthcoming book is Against Politeness, Why Politeness Failed America and How Civility Can Save It. We've been speaking with the author, Alexandra Hudson, an award-winning journalist, author, and speaker. Really appreciate your time and your insights today.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
Many of you have been emailing me saying, David, you're on Rumble, the right-wing sort of clone of YouTube. Are you going to get on Truth Social, Trump's right-wing clone of Twitter? And the answer is I've actually tried, but I'm unable to get on. And many questions as to why yet another one of these right-wing app launches has gone horribly wrong. And indeed, there are now reports that Donald Trump is completely furious about the failure of this completely farcical social media app. The Daily Beast is reporting that Donald Trump is just going completely bonkers. As Donald Trump weighs another run for the White House, he embarked on a new business opportunity, which is Truth Social. And it's looking like an embarrassing dud. In recent weeks, sources have heard the former president on the phone swearing gratuitously and asking things like, what the F is going on? He's repeatedly groused about the negative press and the less than stellar optics of the rollout, these sources said. And he's demanded to know why more people aren't using it, why the app isn't swiftly dominating the competition. Now, I think there's actually two parts to this. There's the technical disaster and there's the part where not a lot of people care about the app. On the technical side, when I tried to sign up, I don't have an iPhone, so I couldn't. I just had to get on a beta. Yeah, a beta. On a waiting list for the Android beta. And so if you don't have an iPhone, you're just out. But even people with iPhones have said, you know, they're like number 80,000 on the wait list and it just doesn't go anywhere. So there's like the technical side. But also, what's the point of the app? I mean, what I mean by that is what they basically market it as is, you know, all of the stuff we can't say everywhere else, because it's disinformation and violates terms of service, you will be allowed to say here. So come here to say it. But then the problem is it's just a stupid echo chamber. And it's just the people that spread the misinformation spreading it to each other. And then like journalists who just want to see what's going on, or people like me who I'm like, well, it sounds funny, I'll try to sign up. So there's the technical problem and the fact that not that many people are interested in this. So everything going wrong. If the preliminary traffic numbers are of any indication, the former president and current wannabe social media mogul has a point about the low traffic. The Daily Beast reviewed analyses of visits to Truth Social, and they describe the numbers as anemic, and that Trump's Truth Social is doing worse or the same as other MAGA social sites like Gab, Getter, and then you've got Rumble. Rumble seems to actually be doing a little bit better, but it's not going particularly well. And I don't know, as far as the waiting list, how even if everybody from the waiting list got on, it still doesn't seem like it would be particularly successful. So I don't really pretend to know what it would take to launch a real bona fide competitor to like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, et cetera, because I'm the first to admit that, you know, there's these network effects. And so when we say, well, if you don't like the rules on YouTube, start your own. Fine, sure. We also have to concede that once YouTube has so much market power, it becomes more and more difficult to really build something successful as an alternative. I completely get that. But at the same time, the premise here, like this is where you go for your right wing stuff, that they call it for free speech, where you can say anything, but you actually can't. Like, try criticizing Trump on some of these platforms, you actually will get banned. But you need to appeal to someone other than those people in order to build a successful app, because the hardcore MAGA people that are so hardcore that they'll abandon Twitter and Facebook for something like this. It's a relatively small crowd. And so it was clear what this was going to be. There's other platforms trying to fill the niche of like the hard right MAGA clown type platform. And it's unlikely that this is going to succeed. My prediction, it's very quietly never spoken about. They don't shut it down because shutting it down would be admitting defeat. They just don't really talk about it. And if asked, Trump says there's great interest in it's continuing to build. That's my prediction. Let me know what you expect. I want to look at two very short clips here from MyPillow CEO and founder Mike Lindell. As I hope you know by now, his predictions are garbage. He was predicting in November and December of 2020 that before January 6th, the election would flip to Biden. I'm sorry, would flip to Trump, and it didn't. And then between January 6th and January 20th, he was predicting something would happen to prevent Joe Biden from being inaugurated, and it didn't happen. And then he predicted it would happen in March, April, and then it would be by the start of summer, and then the end of summer, and then by Thanksgiving. And then here we are in March of 2022, and it hasn't happened. His new thing is he will be filing a lawsuit to ban all voting machines. I know, guys. I know. Take a listen to this.
We got a class action lawsuit that's coming out hopefully by next week. We're getting that's to make the machines. It's the most important class action lawsuit in American history.
Yep.
In world history.
Right. This is more important than when companies leak toxic chemicals into waterways and it causes cancer. This is bigger than the class action lawsuits against tobacco companies that have led to so many deaths. This is the biggest. Come on.
Get rid of the machines because they're considered defective devices. That's what the lawsuit is. A defective product.
Like, by the way, what does the clawsuit mean?
That brakes on a car. Brian, when you get a car and you're driving down the road, you expect to get you to point A to point B. If you turn to the right and it goes left, it's
true.
Defective.
True.
Right? Well, we've been working on this lawsuit for 5 months, and it's ready to launch. I've been saying on my station, Frank TV, Frank Speech TV, we reached out.
He seems confused by what he's saying and out of breath. I mean, every aspect of this is cuckoo.
To call the county commissioners and county clerks in the country to get on board this class action lawsuit. We have a list now of over 300 out of 3,000 counties.
What do you think it's like to be so delusional? Like, what do you think it's like to be so disconnected from reality?
You only need a couple, but they're jumping on board. And so if you're watching out there, you guys can go to frankspeech.com and go down. There's a form there. You fill out, email my team. You can get on board with this.
What does it even mean to get on board? Like, if I want to get on board with his lawsuit, if I go to what's even at Frank Speech? Yeah, it's not even, there's not really even anything here. Like, it's not even clear you can do anything. Just a complete and total fantasy world. I mean, complete and utter. He also spoke at a fundraiser for Republican candidate Carrie Lake. And he talked about it there. And here he said it's a lawsuit against all machines.
Here, I'm going to tell you right now, I've been working on it 5 months.
Yeah.
And we're doing a class action. Actually, I'm announcing it here. I announced it on my program. Y'all watch frankspeech.com. Keep watching. But it's a class action lawsuit against all machines.
That's even funnier because I know he means voting machines. But when Pillow says your dishwasher is about to be legal hell is about to rain down on your dishwasher. If you thought that your toaster was free and clear, he is filing an injunction against the toaster. If you've been wondering why isn't bagel mode working, he's suing. He's suing over all machines, guys.
That they're defective devices,
yes.
Okay? I have lawyers worked on this for 5 months. We're getting county commissioners, county clerks. They're all the plaintiffs, and we've already got about 300 on board.
Mm.
And we're going to get rid of these machines once and for all.
Good old Mike Pillow. He's simultaneously a complete and total clown, but also a MAGA hero. And that's really kind of the same thing. We've got a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a new caller. I have a feeling we might be hearing from this guy frequently.
Yeah, I listen to your show. What a joke.
Right.
What a joke. You need to wake up. Have you been to a store lately?
Yes.
Shelves are empty. Gas prices are doubled. Inflation's at 31-year high. I mean, what a joke. You know, I know you don't like Trump. Okay, that's good. You don't like the way he tweeted, or you don't like what he said about bleach. I mean, really, grow up, be an adult. He had his foot on Putin's neck.
Okay. So there's, I think, 11, is there, I'd have to go back. I think there were 11 lies there. Now, you know, I mean, I've already spoken about gas prices, and it's a real problem. It's a problem in a number of ways. It just doesn't really have to do with Joe Biden.
In North Korea under his thumb. What a joke, really. You need to wake up. You and all your listeners need to wake up, and you need to stop passing that propaganda, that Democratic propaganda you pass off as reality.
I'm not even a Democrat.
Yeah, we think Trump won. Well, or at least he would have won if there wasn't a pandemic and you didn't bend those rules in your favor so you could drop off ballots, have carloads of people pulling up, you know, have people mailing in millions and millions of ballots.
I think we're up to, is it 18 lies so far? We're only 51 seconds in, but 18 lies.
Yeah, Trump would have won if you didn't cheat. And that's cheating. I don't know what you think cheating is. There has to be some grand conspiracy. The grand conspiracy is Democrats change the rules.
Yeah. Remember, even Republican legislatures also modified voting rules to allow people to vote by mail who wouldn't ordinarily be allowed to. It doesn't really matter. But again, this is a reminder. There's people we can talk to reasonably, and there's people we can't. That guy seems to be beyond saving. We've got a great bonus show for you today. We will actually talk about the Joe Biden approval rating bump that happened. Is it Ukraine? Is it the State of the Union? What is it? We will talk about U.S. Olympic champion Brittany Griner being arrested and held in Russia. And we will talk about a man sentenced to prison for using the COVID loan money that he got to buy Pokemon cards. Pokemon cards. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. I have some COVID money fraud stories to tell myself. Not of anything I did, but just of things I've caught wind of. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Get instant...
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
RCT techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT in sound from way out.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today I'm announcing the United States is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy.
The United States has banned Russian energy imports as Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its 14th day. We'll speak to Antonia Yuhas, author of The Tyranny of Oil, about the ban and growing calls for a green energy revolution. Then we speak to Tariq Ali in London about Russia's invasion, NATO's expansion in Eastern Europe, and Ukrainian President Zelensky's historic address to the House of Commons.
We will not give up and we will not lose. We will fight till the end. We will fight at sea. We will fight in the air. We will defend our land, whatever the cost. We will fight in the forests, in the fields, on the shores, in the cities and villages.
Plus, the Florida State Senate has passed the so-called Don't Say Gay education bill, while welfare officials in Texas have been ordered to launch child abuse investigations against parents who seek gender-affirming care for their transgender children. We'll talk to the ACLU's Chase Strangio.
Fighting back against both these measures, pushing Governor DeSantis to veto the so-called Don't Say Gay bill, and continuing to press forward with our litigation in Texas. These are happening amidst a national effort to attack transgender children. We are also seeing bills that would criminalize health care for transgender minors moving forward in Alabama and Idaho.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russia's assault on Ukraine continues 2 weeks after it launched its invasion. Hundreds of civilians have been killed. Over 2 million people have become refugees as thousands more attempt to flee Ukraine's cities amidst the Russian onslaught. Residents in besieged areas are running out of medicine, food, water. Hundreds of thousands have lost power. The International Committee of the Red Cross called the humanitarian situation apocalyptic. Ukraine says it will attempt to evacuate civilians through six humanitarian corridors after Russia pledged to observe local ceasefires, though previous efforts have failed. On Tuesday, 5,000 people were evacuated from the city of Sumy, including around 700 Indian students who'd been trapped since the start of the war and many other students of color from around the world. The Pentagon rejected an offer by Poland to send its fleet of MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine using a U.S. airbase in Germany, saying it, quote, raises serious concerns for the entire NATO alliance. This comes as Vice President Kamala Harris embarks on a two-day visit to Poland today and Romania. Meanwhile, efforts are ramping up to further isolate Russia. On Tuesday, President Biden announced the U.S. is banning Russian oil.
Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine. This is a move that has strong bipartisan support in Congress and, I believe, in the country. Americans have rallied to support their Ukrainian people and made it clear we will not be part of subsidizing Putin's war.
In response, Kremlin accused the U.S. of declaring an economic war on Russia.